Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If it was easy, everyone would do it. And it's not easy. And I guess the trick is to make it look easy and to make it feel comfortable and seamless so that you don't convey any of that kind of inner anxiety to anybody else around you who might be watching.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I talk to entrepreneur, editor and podcast host Liz Earle. Perfect. Hello, I'm Steve Whiteley and welcome to Balancing Acts, a series of conversations with an array of creatives. We talk about their journey, the struggles they faced whilst progressing their career, strategies they use to unlock their creativity, how they balance their career with their personal lives, what impact this has had on their mental health, and lots more. Liz has done so much over the years, and I guess you could describe her as one of the first original wellness influencers before influencer was even a term that was bandied around. She began her career in TV on This Morning before leaving to host the first UK television programme on beauty, which was called BBC One's Beauty Wise. She then had her own series, Liz Earle's Lifestyle, that ran for 3 series on ITV. And then having had a successful career in media, Liz then co-founded the Liz Earle Beauty Company with her friend Kim Buckland, which was eventually sold in 2010 for an undisclosed sum. Liz eventually left the company where she continued to work as a global ambassador and launched Liz Earle Wellbeing, a magazine and podcast. And the Liz Earle Wellbeing Show is a leading lifestyle and wellbeing podcast, which Liz hosts. And it's now in its 8th season and has had over 4 million downloads. In 2007, Liz was awarded an MBE for her services to business, and she also received an honorary doctorate of law from both Portsmouth and Staffordshire Universities. When it comes to wellness, Liz is an expert in feel-good food and natural physical and mental health care. So I thought this was the perfect conversation to kick off 2022 on Balancing Acts. You know, it's that time of year where we all want to start making some positive changes, and you know, we've pigged out a bit over the festive period and maybe want to lose some weight, get fit, etc. So I think you'll find this conversation with Liz fascinating. So it's a slightly different type of episode to usual, but I think you're going to really enjoy it. And remember, if you like this episode, if you like Balancing Acts in general, then please do rate and review us on Apple and subscribe if you haven't done already. Tell your friends. I hope the conversations this year have brought you some sense of balance in your life, or you've taken some insight from some of the amazing guests we've had on. What I'm going to do in the new year is put together a highlight reel of some of the most memorable conversations. So if you want to take a deep dive into the back catalogue, that should point you in the right direction. And now, without further ado, over to Liz. Perfect. I don't know if you, I'm sure you've been in the same situation, but it's always somewhat nerve-wracking when you're interviewing a fellow podcast host. Because, you know, there's going to be some sort of analysis going on in terms of style and technique, what they are doing, what they aren't doing right. Have you had many of those experiences as a podcast host when you've interviewed other hosts of successful podcasts?
Yeah, I mean, I actually quite like interviewing podcast hosts because they know the game. You know, and you know, they know that if they stumble or whatever, they just stop. give you a moment to cut it and then pick up again.
Yeah. I'll just say that again.
Yeah.
That moment.
And they, you know, they're usually kind of well seasoned to it. You know, there was one guy, I don't know what he was on, but, you know, like every 30 seconds there was a sniff and I was thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know what you've been doing, but we're going to have to cut all of that out, you know.
Yeah. I had one, I did an interview not too long ago where there's a lot of banging in the background and the person I was interviewing was a mum of two and I said, oh, have you got the little one there? And she said, no, it's my husband. It happens. But look, I really appreciate taking the time to talk with me. You have had such a varied and interesting career. And I wanted to start off by asking you, in terms of your entrepreneurial spirit, is that something that's always been with you? Or do you feel that developed over time as part of your well-being journey?
I think it's a mixture. You know, nature versus nurture, you know, what is the most important thing? I think I was definitely born inquisitive and with a certain amount of resilience and an appetite for a bit of risk.
Okay.
You know, which you need to be comfortable with. You know, anybody who starts anything on their own, no matter what it is, whether it's in life, you know, home life or business, you need to be able to accept that things may not go entirely to plan. And be relatively comfortable with that. So I guess I was kind of born with that and born with drive and ambition, which I don't think you can necessarily fabricate. I think you can learn a bit, but you have to have that kind of passion in you.
Yes.
That spurs you forward because it's always tricky. You know, I can remember things going really wrong and, you know, my daughter saying, oh my goodness, you know, when she was seeing me up at like 3 a.m. trying to fix something. And I said, yeah, but that's the name of the game, isn't it? You know, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And it's not easy. And I guess the trick is to make it look easy and to make it feel comfortable and seamless so that you don't convey any of that kind of inner anxiety to anybody else around you who might be watching.
Yes, never let the mask slip.
I try not to, although actually I have to say with social media, you know, the mask does slip and there is a real authenticity. You know, I started doing my Instagram lives during lockdown.
Yes.
Never meant to do it. I never really did anything from home. I always kept myself quite private and work was work and home was home. And there was definitely a line. But then when we were all at home and we were all locked in, and I couldn't go to a studio, you know, I couldn't go on a fancy location. It had to be on my kitchen table. And so I had to let people in. And I started it just as sort of a one-off. And it went really well. And people really liked it and said, oh, well, you know, will you do it tomorrow? So I said, yeah, okay. So we did another one the next day. And then the next day, and then it was sort of, well, you know, you will be back tomorrow lunchtime, won't you? And there was, you know, there was a real connection with people, I think, who were feeling very worried and disconnected. And it was a very nerve-wracking time for a lot of people. So I ended up doing an Instagram live from various parts of my house, you know, from my bedroom in my pajamas and all sorts, every day for 16 weeks. And that made me a bit more comfortable about authenticity, about sitting there with wet hair, yes, okay, with no makeup on. You know, always a nice light, obviously, that's the key. You know, apart from that, it was quite real. And people would interrupt me and the, you know, a delivery guy would come or, you know, one of my kids would come in or something would break or it wouldn't work. And you know, I got used to it not being perfect. And I kind of quite like that now.
Yes. I mean, just that example alone, I feel, reflects your entrepreneurial attitude. You know, you're in lockdown and then you just decide to turn your hand at something new and then you stick to it and it creates this whole momentum and suddenly you've got a new avenue. But yeah, I can I agree with what you're saying. I think people particularly now really connect and relate to people that are open and vulnerable and honest. And that's obviously the beauty of doing things such as podcasts where there's less polish and sheen behind them. And you really get the insight into a person.
I love live broadcasts or, you know, talking like this, where it's kind of one-to-one. I've been so used to doing TV for so many years where it's all edited and it's filmed and you do 13 takes. You know, I mean, you know the drill because you're in that world as well. And you lose that sort of spontaneity and freshness. And people can edit you and they can make you appear different in some way by changing what you say or missing out perhaps the thing that you think was really important. When if it's live or if it's something like this, you know, you can pick up on something and say, no, actually, that's not what I meant. What I really mean is this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, give me live TV or live radio any day over some fancy film thing.
Oh, yeah, I concur. In my case, it's more of a lot of ums and ahs before I rephrase the answer. So that's my strategy. I also find sometimes I'm re-listening to episodes when I'm editing them, and then I'll notice patterns of speech that I repeat. I say, oh, you're saying a lot of likes in there. You know,
yeah.
Like seems to be a very, you know, it's a repetitive pattern, I think, for the millennials. You know, it's like really cool.
Like this. Like, it's yeah, like, well, my keywords have been gosh, which is okay. Just like, gosh, really?
Yeah.
Or wow. And, I, you know, I, every time now I hear that word coming in my head, I go, no, don't go there. Don't say that. And also not talking over people and giving people space, you know, to say yeah. something and not jumping in. And actually not being too preconditioned, because in the old days when I started podcasting, I would have a script in a way. I'd have a list of questions. And I wouldn't feel comfortable enough to deviate from that. And I think yes. you can tell with interviewers when they just move on to the next question, even though somebody's actually said something really interesting that is a bit left of field that you weren't expecting. And you, there's a risk, isn't there, with that? Because you think, oh, they've suddenly mentioned, you know, their, I don't know, dead grandmother or whatever. You know, shall I go there? Yes. Where is that going to take us? You know, am I bold enough to say, actually, do you know what? Can we talk about that for a minute? Because that sounds really interesting. So again, that's a case of kind of risk taking. So I've learned now to not only just sit and ask the questions, but to really listen to what somebody says and be prepared to go completely off piece with it.
Yeah, because being able to sincerely listen and be present at the moment is in itself a skill set. You know, it's something that I've definitely had to learn to get better at. As you were saying before about the jumping in, I'm very ADHD. And so sometimes, you know, I'll hear something and get excited and want to add to it. Yeah. But over time, I've learned to give the guest, or whether even it's in a podcast or just a general conversation in a social setting, give the other person a bit more space. But that's been something that you've had to work out for quite a long time.
That's really interesting that you know, your ADHD, because I've learned a lot about that. I've done a lot on mental health recently. Okay. And I've got family members who are affected with both ADD and ADHD.
Right.
And, you know, I recognize the signs, and there's a lot that we could chat about nutritionally that you might find quite interesting that can help.
Well, funny enough, Liz, I do have a lot of nutritional-led questions that I'm going to ask you a little bit later on, not purely for my own benefit, not at all.
Feel free, private consultation.
Yeah, private consultation, exactly. I mean, that's the advantage of having a podcast, right? I wanted to ask you, if we rewind back to early on in your career, you already started off, you had a very successful career in media. You know, you were a presenter on This Morning and you had your own TV show. In a sense, you were, I mean, we're in a world now where we've got all these beauty and wellness influences, which you are as well now. But in a sense, you were one of the first wellness influences out there before social media was around. Would you agree with that?
Before it was a thing.
Yeah, before this fad even existed, you were one of the innovators.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, I feel very fortunate. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, will hear the name Lizelle and I'll think, oh, yeah, that's the girl that makes face cream, you know.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I'm quite happy with that. But yes, there was a life before the beauty company. And I started out 35 years ago writing for magazines, writing about health and wellness at a time when it was all so new. There were these weird people called naturopaths and nutritionists and complementary therapists doing weird things like reflexology and aromatherapy. And there was nobody really covering that. And the magazine that I was working for wanted to know a bit more because I was the new kid in town. They said, okay, Liz, you go off and interview these really weird people. You know, you're kind of into all of this stuff.
Right.
And so I went off on this really crazy journey and did all sorts of things. I was, you know, a vegan teetotal macrobiotic for a couple of years.
Wow. And this is way before it was in fashion.
Oh, I mean, way. I had SCOBYs growing in my airing cupboard 30 years ago before anybody even heard the word, you know, kombucha. So coming back to it now is great because I've got a lot of experience from back then.
Okay.
And hopefully a bit of kind of heritage and history and trust, because there's a lot of faddy stuff out there. And I've learned to be a little bit discerning over the years as to what's real and what's just a temporary fad.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a difficult terrain to navigate through to figure out what the difference is between something that's authentic and genuinely good for you. And just in diets alone, there's so many different fads. And I think it's so challenging and confusing for people to try and figure out what is the best diet for them. Did you go through a process of experimenting and trying all these different types of diets and so forth before you were able to arrive on one that worked for you? As in, were you almost your own guinea pig?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I did try lots of things. I had very bad eczema as a teenager. And one of the things that led me actually into looking at diet was meeting a naturopath and various researchers who were looking at essential fatty acids in the diet and the role of fat generally in the diet. And, you know, you have to remember back in the day, everybody was talking about low fat. You know, fat was the baddie. You've got to cut it out of your diet. And, you know, it's just going to be really bad for you. It's going to make you gain weight. And it causes heart disease and all of that. And we now know that so much of that is wrong. And actually, it's not the fats that are the bad guys. It's the sugars. And there's been a massive deflection away from that. And, you know, we can talk about kind of vested interest in food and pharma and all of that. And for me, I guess one of my light bulb moments was when I realized that eating more good quality fats and oils, things like olive oil and high quality fats, whole milk and, nothing low fat now, comes into my house, realizing that that is very good for skin. It's very good for brain health. It's very good for overall well-being. And, for women especially, fats are really important because cholesterol is natural. We need it in our body. And it's kind of the mothership from which we make all our hormones. So as a midlife woman, if you start to cut out fat in your diet or go low fat, things can really go wrong. And we need good quality fats and oils in the diet. And it's kind of working our way through that and realizing that, yes, plants are good for us and we need to have lots of green veg particularly, but not all plants are good. Mm-hmm. And, I'm very much into things like regenerative farming, eating meat and fish and dairy and all of those good things and not mucking about with food too much. Nothing that's too processed. I try not to have too much stuff that comes out of a packet, for example, or things that, my grandma wouldn't recognize.
What made you revert back to meat eating after going vegan?
I wasn't entirely vegan because of macrobiotics. I was eating things like fish. Being macrobiotic is tough. It was quite antisocial back then, and it was quite hard to get hold of all the things. And I still kind of dip in and out of it. I mean, I love things like seaweeds full of iodine. But I think it was knowing a little bit more about the balance of food that's needed and good quality nutrients, nutritionally dense foods, and steering away from carbs, basically beige food. You need to give that a wide swerve. Things that are processed, things that come out of packets that have been too mucked around with. And also, I think scientifically, looking at nutritional necessities for the body, and you talk about, which diet is right for you, and that is absolutely spot on, because what's right for me isn't necessarily going to be right for everybody. I mean, there are some basic common parameters like low sugar, for example. But I did a nutrigenomic test a year or two ago, and I started to look into that for my magazine. And I have a genetic variance, which means that I don't create retinol, which is the vitamin A form of vitamin A. It's the animal produce form. You can only get retinol from meat and fish and eggs and dairy. Now, if you talk to, some vegans, they'll say, well, that's fine because we can make vitamin A from beta carotene. If you eat lots of carrots and lots of plants, that converts naturally into retinol, vitamin A. Well, yeah, in theory it does, but for about a third of the population, it doesn't. And I'm one of that third. When I did my nutritional testing, I have a genetic variance or a SNP, which means that my genes do not convert beta carotene to retinol. Right. So I would personally be a hopeless vegan. My body knew that already, which is why I've never kind of really embraced that fully. And that does affect about a third of the population. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are perhaps thinking that they're getting all the vitamin A that they need because they're eating lots of plants, ergo having lots of beta carotene, but actually they're not converting it. And that's really damaging. It's damaging for brain health. It's particularly bad for your eyes, your eyesight, all sorts of things. So I think we're becoming more individualized in an approach to diet. You know, it's fine to exclude various food groups if you want to, but it's really important to do research and find out whether that is actually right for you personally.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting point, because I think there's a case whereby a lot of people who might follow a specific diet, whether it's veganism or something else, they are quite black and white in their approach and thinking, you know, and yeah. It can become quite divisive almost, you know, if you're somebody, you know, if you say, oh, yeah, no, I'm vegan 90% of the time, but occasionally I eat fish.
That's not a vegan then.
No, it's not a vegan, no. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I say, you know, if you're saying I eat 90%. No. Maybe it's the term that needs to be changed. I eat a plant-based diet 90% of the time, and 10% of the time I occasionally eat fish. Some people will be okay with that, but a lot of sort of hardcore vegans will be absolutely disgusted by that statement. And I do think it's important, as you say, for people to understand that everyone responds in different ways and needs to go on individual diets. I was starting out on that journey now, what would you suggest as being the best way to try and find out and do the research to figure out what the best diet is for me as an individual?
Well, I would say start with the basics. So for everybody, no matter who you are, we need to cut down on carbs and sugars. You know, there's no question that in terms of metabolic disorders and insulin resistance and all those things that affect our immune system and longevity, are the sugars. You know, sugar, basically pure sugar, has no redeeming features. So a little bit, okay, but, you know, be aware that even things like, you know, potatoes and pasta and rice and all of that, you know, convert into sugars in the bloodstream. It's not just about adding, you know, spoonfuls of sugar to your tea or whatever. So that's fundamental. And there are, you know, the macronutrients that you need. We need quite a lot of protein. We need lots of vitamin D, for example, particularly in the winter months. So again, that's, you know, that's from eggs and milk and all of that kind of thing. Iodine, again, is really important. Choline is a really important thing. I love eggs. If the government ever want an egg czar, then I am that person, because I think eggs, they're such an amazing powerhouse of nutrition. They are full of, you know, protein and iron and, you know, all sorts of good things. And, you know, no chicken is harmed, particularly if you can get organic free-range eggs. You know, I used to keep chickens on my farm, and, you know, chickens just lay eggs every day. That's what they do. So, you know, you can either kind of let them rot in the ground, or you can pick them up and eat them. I didn't have any cockerels, so my eggs were always, you know, unfertilized, just hen's eggs. So, you know, I would think that there are ways, I think, around that. Interestingly, I have a lot of vegan friends who will eat oysters.
Okay.
And oysters are an incredible powerhouse. Again, lots of protein, lots of zinc, really good for guys, really good for our immune system. And that's a whole kind of another debate as to, because oysters aren't sentient creatures. They don't have, you know, central nervous system or brains or anything like that. So they're almost a kind of, you know, quasi plant algae type thing. So we've had lots of discussions. I got a lovely vegan staff writer, and she eats oysters, and you know, I asked her to write a feature on it because it was just a really interesting discussion to have, really.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there are things to be aware of. And I think it's kind of trial and error. I mean, you can do nutritional tests. So nutrigenomics is a growing science, and companies like LifeCode GX will do a little DNA swab, and they'll tell you what your genes are saying. And what I like about that is it's very binary. It's black and white.
Right.
It's not, well, you might be a little bit this. It's like being a little bit pregnant. You know, it doesn't happen. It's a kind of a yes, no answer.
Yeah.
And you either have the genes that will process certain nutrients or you don't. And that will never change in your life. You know, you can do that test when you're 5 or when you're 105. You're going to get the same answer. And it's very interesting to look in this country to see how many of us, for example, don't transport vitamin D very well. Mm. And vitamin D is absolutely crucial. It's crucial for mental health, for anxiety, for depression, for creating dopamine and serotonin. So I think that's kind of that's one side of it. But the other thing that I feel really strongly about, you've kind of got me on my soapbox now, is looking at things like the free from foods. So lactose-free, gluten-free, you know, these are words that we've just become used to seeing. And if you look in any supermarket aisle, it's just growing and growing and growing. And the food industry have massively embraced it because they're making loads of money selling us, you know, gluten-free foods, for example. Well, my take on it, having written a lot about gut health, is let's figure out why. Why do you suddenly need to be excluding gluten? Is there something going on in your gut that we can fix through better gut health? Let's get your microbiome better balanced, reduce the areas of inflammation so that you can tolerate all these amazing foods. You know, rather than subject yourself to a lifelong list of having to only go gluten-free, let's get your gut sorted so that you can eat gluten again. And I think for me, that's been a real challenge, not just to sort of sit back and go, oh, I can never eat gluten. It's like, well, yeah, you can. Let's just fix your gut so you're enabled to do that.
That's fascinating. I am gluten intolerant, and so much so.
Are you? And have you always been gluten intolerant?
You know, I think I only got sort of diagnosed about 7 years ago. But it led me on to writing and performing a comedy rap called Gluten Free. And we made a music.
No, I didn't know that. You see, I should have done my research.
I've kind of buried it a little bit. No, I haven't really buried it. But we released it. And then we got brands like Genius would be sending me hampers in the post. Genius, the gluten-free brand and that kind of thing. But that's really interesting to hear. I've looked into gut health, and I know there's products like Simproof, for instance, you know, but they're not cheap to start using regularly.
No, and I think actually there's a lot we can do. You could, as a starting point, you can start eating more live foods and fermented foods. So the 5Ks really is, when you're looking after your gut, it's the 5Ks. I don't mean running, you know, 5K, although I mean that's an optional extra. But if you look at them, so kefir, do you drink kefir?
I don't know. I don't consume that much dairy, but I have thought about it. It's crossed my mind. I think I've tried it maybe once.
Well, kefir is great. And a lot of people might say, well, I can't have kefir because I'm lactose intolerant. Well, actually, what happens with kefir is when the good gut bacteria make kefir, because basically you make it by adding a probiotic culture to milk and it turns it into this kind of like supercharged yogurt drink full of probiotics. And the beneficial gut bacteria actually munch up all the lactose in the milk. So they use that to kind of fortify themselves and to grow. So by the time you're drinking kefir, cow's milk kefir, the bacteria will have taken 99.9% of the lactose out of it. So it's kind of like a lactose-free drink. So a lot of people who are lactose intolerant can actually tolerate kefir. So I would start with that daily. Then if you look at the other case, you've got things like kimchi, which is the Korean pickle. Yeah. And one teaspoon of kimchi could have maybe a billion probiotic beneficial bacteria. So you don't need a lot. A little bit of kimchi on your, you know, whatever, piece of steak or baked potato or lentil salad or, you know, whatever it is. Kraut, so sauerkraut, pickled cabbage. You can make that, chop up a cabbage, shove it in some salty water, leave it alone in a jar for 3 weeks and it turns into sauerkraut. Cheap as chips, really easy, really good for us. What else is there? Kombucha. So do you drink kombucha made with a scoby?
I've drunk it. I've tried
it. That's always another good one. And what's the other? Okay, well, the other one is kamut, which is kind of the technical name for sourdough bread.
Okay.
And that doesn't actually contain any probiotics or beneficial bacteria, but it's much easier to digest. Because the bacteria in the culture, in your little sourdough starter, actually pre-digest a lot of the product in bread that can make you sensitive to it, can cause bloating.
Right.
So you don't need to go and buy expensive probiotics. I mean, I think, you know, start with a little bit of those 5Ks every day if you can. And then if you want to supplement with probiotics, you know, Simproof, you can get other liquids. I think Simproof, you know, got a good name for itself because it has a lot of clinical trials behind it. So it's kind of scientifically backed. Right. But, you know, I use different brands that have got lots of different strains of beneficial bacteria. You know, we're only just beginning to understand gut health. We're literally scratching the top of the iceberg, if you can scratch an iceberg. You know, there's an awful lot going on below that I think we're going to discover. I love talking about gut health because it links so much with mental health.
Well, that was going to be my next question.
Okay.
Because as you're saying, there's a lot that's been sort of unsurfaced recently in terms of gut health and lots of research surrounding it. And one of the things that come out of it is the correlation between gut health and mental health. My question to you is going to be, have you either, I don't know, advised family members or friends that might have been sort of negatively impacted by their own sort of mental health issues and advised them to work on their gut health? And if so, have you seen then subsequent positive impacts as a result of them changing their gut health diet?
Definitely. Definitely.
Really? That's so interesting.
I mean, I wrote a book a few years ago called The Good Gut Guide, and that has a 6-week plan in it. And as part of that, we put various testers on the 6-week plan to see if it worked. And the results were just really, really phenomenal. And with my own family, I had a couple of teenagers going through exams. And so all the teenage angst and stresses, you know, let alone flipping lockdown. And I would make sure that I really topped up their beneficial bacteria. So I would give them probiotics in the morning. I would make them have their kefir. And I would talk about their friends, you know, because I view that these probiotic good bugs as the friends that live inside us. And you have to look after your friends. You know, you've got to look after your bacterial friends, just as you have to look after your real life friends. And that you can do that in different ways. First of all, you can increase them. So you can add probiotics and things which will give you more friends in your gut, which is good. Secondly, you can feed them. You've got to feed your friends. Once you've established your microbiome and you've got all these lovely good gut bugs growing, you have to look after them. And they love things like resistant starch, insoluble fiber. They love all those tough, stringy veggies, you know, string beans and asparagus and artichoke and all that kind of indigestible stuff will really feed your friends. So you have to think about that. And then you have to not do the things that kill off your friends. So there are things that disrupt your microbiome. So there have been studies looking at artificial sweeteners, for example, having an impact, you know, disrupting microbiome. So things like aspartame in diet drinks has a negative impact on beneficial bacteria. So really, yes, definitely an answer to your question. I've seen big differences. And the reason for that, very simply, is that we make around, they don't know exactly how much, maybe 70, 80, potentially even 90% of our happy brain chemicals, our serotonin and our dopamine is made in the gut. So there's this huge nerve that connects the gut and the brain, the vagus nerve, and you get neurotransmitters that whiz up and down that from the gut into the brain, creating these happy chemicals that reduce anxiety, improve low mood, can help with depression, and all sorts of spectrum disorders, actually. You know, if you start looking at ADD, ADHD, OCD, all of those things, there's lots of very interesting researchers working specifically in that field, autism and more. So it's a fascinating area. Perfect.
Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are. But I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like balancing acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat. We touched upon the ADHD. I'm only bringing up again, it's not for selfish reasons. I mean, maybe, but a lot of people who listen to the podcast are in the creative industries, you know, creatives themselves and creators, filmmakers, etc. And a lot of people who are that way inclined are ADHD, either diagnosed or ADHD in nature. So I wanted to ask you, because you did mention it earlier, what would be your tips, nutritional tips to, I guess, try and manage the ADHD type traits and tendencies that come about as a result of that being that way neurologically balanced?
Yeah. Well, watch your sugar for a start. A lot of people will they'll get their dopamine hit from sugar. So if you can cut back on that, that's a real key thing.
Okay.
There have been some very interesting nutritional studies showing that there is a correlation between high levels of copper and low levels of zinc. So I've had various family members do certain protocols over the years designed to reduce the amount of copper that's going on in the brain. And you can do that by looking at something called methylation, which is really complicated, but it's lots of green leafy veg and sulfurous foods can improve methylation. And vitamin B6 is one of the things that can help with excess copper. And then you need to balance that with more zinc. So I've got, you know, one of my children is on very high levels of zinc, and that's really helping. And you can also do tests. There's something called pyrrol disorder, when people who are ADD or ADHD have been found to have high levels of pyrrol. And you do that, you can detect that through a urine test through a functional medicine doctor.
Okay.
And they can test for that. And, you know, if you know that you have high pyrrol, then you can take action to go on a nutritional program to bring it down. And that all happens without medication.
Right.
And, you know, you don't need to do that, because I know, I mean, I work with a lot of creatives and, you know, they don't want to lose that creative edge. You don't want to lose that creativity, that kind of that spark that fires off ideas in all kinds of different directions. But actually, if you still maintain that, but are able to regain perhaps a little bit of focus at the same time, and also a little bit of certainty of where you are in the world, feeling a little bit more comfortable. Some people with ADD or ADHD have spatial awareness issues, or they might have hearing issues, super sensitive hearing. Do you have a very good hearing?
Yeah. When sirens are going past, or if I'm on the underground and, you know, you get that screeching sound on the train, I have to cover my ears.
Yeah. Okay. So that's very interesting. So you've got an auditory sensitivity, and you can actually do various programs where you can retrain the muscles in your ear to lessen that, to dampen it. Because if you can imagine, if you've got all these sounds coming in at you all the time, because your hearing is so hypersensitive, that can leave you feeling really quite agitated. And that is something that can be helped. Things like visual convergence, you know, people with dyslexia or find, you know, reading difficult because the muscles in their eyes aren't converging properly. That can also be a sign. And then things like retained reflexes. So when we're born, we have what's called the Morrow reflex, which is the startle reflex. And, you know, when babies are born, they'll jump, you know, and suddenly startle. And they lose that. They tend to generally lose that quite quickly. Well, some people who have spectrum disorders don't ever lose the Morrow reflex. They're always, it's this fight or flight. You're permanently in this heightened state. And what you do as you grow up is you learn to control it. You learn actually that jumping out of your skin, you know, every time somebody walks up behind you or walks into a room or bangs a door or something, actually isn't kind of socially acceptable. So you learn to suppress that jump, that startle. But inside, your brain is still processing it. And every time we trigger that fight or flight, we're triggering cortisol in the brain that's heightening anxiety. So you can do various, it's almost like physio exercises. And I did it with one of my children, and we did a 12-week program. Every night I would do these exercises with him at bedtime for a quarter of an hour. And he lost the Morrow reflex. And you can do it. I mean, it takes a bit longer to lose the older you are. I mean, some people actually lose it really quickly. Other people, it can take longer. But once you've lost that, everything just becomes a little bit calmer.
Yeah.
So there are lots of things that you can do without having to go on to medication. Medication is just kind of quite a blunt instrument. It can just sort of numb things. And I know a lot of creatives will stay away from that because, quite rightly, they don't want to be numb. But you might actually want to be a bit less anxious.
Yeah. And the medication leads to anxiety as well. You know, there's so many different after effects from it. And it can almost feel like you're two people. You know, you've got two personalities when you're on it and when you're off it, because it dramatically changes the personality. So I'm all for natural alternatives and remedies for sure.
Yeah. Having said that, I mean, I'm not against medication. I think it can really help, and it can really be a very good transition.
Yes.
You know, while you find these other things. But, you know, if you do have hypersensitive hearing and you can help to block that. I mean, you can buy special earplugs that I know people that get migraine or aura migraine, for example, you know, they can't cope with loud noises in restaurants or bustly, you know, transport or whatever. So they'll wear these earplugs that they can dial up or down depending on who they're with.
Right.
But ultimately, if you can kind of retrain the muscles in your ears so that they are that little bit less sensitive, and it might not be both ears, it might just be coming in through one ear, you know, without you realizing.
Yes. Yeah. That's super interesting. We were talking before about sort of buzzy trends. Are you into the likes of biohacking, Liz?
Yeah, I am, actually. In fact, I used to have on my Instagram, I used to describe myself as a biohacker. But I think, you know, what does it mean, biohacking? I think what it really means to me anyway, my take on it, is that we start to understand a little bit more about how our bodies work. Yes. And about our chemistry and what is right for us. And I've been, you know, really fortunate with my work with wellbeing to talk to so many people at the forefront of nutritional therapies and investigating things like NMN and glutathione and all sorts of weird, wonderful nutrients, looking at sirtuins and telomere length and all those things that are designed to help us live well for longer. Mm-hmm. Looking at things like LED, near infrared, red light saunas, cold water swimming. I mean, you can go on forever, can't you? I mean, but I love it because it's all very positive. It's all about how to hack into your body to make it the best it can be.
I had my first LED sauna experience recently, and I also tried cryotherapy.
Love cryotherapy. Did you go and get frozen?
Yes, I did, for 3 minutes.
I love it.
Yeah,
isn't it this the best thing? What did you think?
I felt fantastic after. I felt so light and energized. I'll be honest with you, it was the morning after the night before. I had a bit of a hangover, and my girlfriend and I thought, right, what can we do to get over this? And so we Googled, we found this place off Liverpool Street.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, and so we doubled up. Well, we both did the LED sauna, and then I did the cryotherapy. She just watched on and filmed me and post Instagram story.
I love it. You know, they use it for top athletes for muscle recovery. You've got, you know, people like, you know, top tennis players who go and sit in ice baths after matches. And, you know, I get, you've got Wim Hof, you know, the Iceman, doing extraordinary things, which I guess is similar. But in terms of producing endorphins and lifting mood and depression, I remember the first time I tried it, and, you know, they make you really, really cold. Is it like minus 160?
I think mine was minus 130.
130, yeah. And it, you know, it is only for a few minutes, but you do think you're going to die. That is the kind of that moment when you think, I cannot stand this. And luckily, you know, there's always a therapist who's with you and talks you through it, and, you know, and to make sure that you're safe and you can, you know, step out of the chamber at any point. You know, you're not locked in. But I did this and I felt amazing afterwards. And I remember, I think I did it in the morning, and I was sitting in my studios just doing a bit of work in the evening on my own. And I suddenly realized that I hadn't stopped smiling. You know, I was sitting on my own and I was just kind of beaming. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, you know, there are so many happy chemicals in my brain whizzing around, making me feel amazing. And I slept so, so well. And if you look at people in Silicon Valley, a lot of the kind of high tech entrepreneurs or people who have been into biohacking for a long, long time, you know, many of them will have cryotherapy chambers in the corner of their office, and they'll do it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the end goal for me. I know I've made it.
Your own cryotherapy chamber.
It's in the corner of my bedroom. Yes.
I'd love that too.
I know. Yeah. I mean, from my understanding, it's something you need to be doing regularly in order to gain the benefits from it in terms of recovery and injury prevention.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't do it regularly. It's something that I kind of dip in and out of. I enjoy cold water swimming, which is a similar thing. Doesn't take you quite as cold.
Yeah.
But that is good.
Yeah.
And I think, interestingly, you were talking about hangovers. And one of the things that's really helped me is when I was doing my nutrigenomic testing, I discovered that I don't process glutathione. I don't convert glutathione. Glutathione is a kind of the master antioxidant, which we're supposed to make in our bodies. Our bodies make it for ourselves naturally from other nutrients. Okay. Well, I, again, have a genetic SNP that doesn't allow that to happen. So for me to get glutathione, I need to take it. That's the only way I'm going to get it. I can live without it. I can have vitamin C and other antioxidants, but I function better with it. And when I did the test and I realized that, I raced out and I found the nearest health food shop and bought the first glutathione supplement that I came across, took some, and woke up the next day feeling like the Duracell bunny with new batteries.
Really?
I mean, it was extraordinary. And talking to nutritionist friends, they go, oh yeah, glutathione, we know that. You know, when we go out for a heavy night, we're all popping the glutathione before we go, because it's an incredible detoxifier. This is not your pink ticket to go and drink a load and then take a load of glutathione. Always drink responsibly, et cetera, et cetera. But should you be going out knowing that you're going to have a few drinks and don't want to wake up with quite such a sore head, alongside drinking all your water and all of that and pacing yourself, having a bit of glutathione before you go to bed can really help with the next morning.
Yes. And by the same token, I don't know if you've heard of MDMA-assisted therapy. I tried.
Yeah, I don't know very much about it, but this is the kind of the nootropics.
I was actually about to get on, nootropics. But yeah. What I was going to say is that, there was a very strict regime in terms of 5-HTP before and after to before you don't have a huge come down. And again, it's not advice to go out and get off your heads and then take 5-HTP, but it was very useful for that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these things are helping to create other chemicals within the body and neurotransmitters that can help with recovery from all sorts of things.
For sure. It's fascinating sort of delving into that world. It really is. So on the topic of nootropics, is that something that you are delving into?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. We're writing about that at the magazine at the moment. And I'm fascinated by all the different mushrooms.
Okay.
You know, lion's mane mushroom, the work that they're doing with that, with Alzheimer's, for example, and cognitive function as we age, looking at things like reishi mushrooms for immunity. There's just so much out there that we don't know. I mean, I'm just beginning to learn about it myself, but I definitely think it's an area of medicine, nutritional science that we're going to be hearing so much more about for sure.
Yeah, it's exciting to be sort of at the early stage of it and see how it's all going to transpire and how it affects us as a human race.
Yeah, hopefully in a good way. I think there's so much that we have yet to discover. And a lot of these things have come from centuries old, millennia in some cases, or old wives' tales that we're now able to prove through modern science and genetic coding and deconstruct things and analyze them properly and realize that there's an awful lot of science in it. Yeah. You know, I mean, people in the Caucasus, for example, were brewing up, you know, soured goat's milk in saddlebags and making kefir and drinking it. I mean, quite what possessed them to drink it, I've no idea, but they did drink it and they felt a lot better for it and they carried on drinking it. And we now know that there's the vagus nerve that connects the gut to the brain, and that's what's, you know, producing serotonin, and that's why things like kefir work. But, you know, anecdotally, these ancient peoples, they did these things because they found them beneficial and they embraced them. And now we're able to analyze it and see why.
And then hopefully use it in a battle against AI and the robots.
Well, I wonder. I mean, that's way beyond my pay grade, that. But yeah, I think
we both. We'll leave it to Elon Musk to figure out.
I'm sure he's into nootropics.
Oh, he's got to be, right?
Absolutely, for sure. Put money on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've gone completely off topic, Liz. We talked about before about having questions written down. I had some, and then I've got pulled into this area because it's fascinating, and it's I could listen to you talk for days on this. I wanted to ask you, going from being a TV presenter to then setting up your own beauty brand, a lot of people would be very content with a successful career in the media industry. What was it that motivated you to then move into setting up your business, which you obviously ultimately then, you know, successfully sold and sort of stayed on as a consultant? What was it that made you sort of make that decision to go down that road?
Well, to be honest, it wasn't my idea.
Okay.
It was my best friend who was fantastic in the beauty world at marketing and making products. And, you know, I was doing TV and writing books and, you know, getting a little bit of a name for myself. And it was when hairdressers were beginning to make professional products.
Okay.
So you had people like Trevor Sorby and Daniel Galvin and Charles Worthington and Vidal Sassoon and John Frieda and all of those people bringing their expertise to hair care into the high street. And she called me up one morning and she said, look, Liz, you know, you need to be doing this for skincare because women know you, they trust you, you've got a lot of knowledge. And the big brands back then, this is going back, you know, more than 25 years, were the big old faithfuls, people like Estee Lauder and Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, you know, women who were trailblazers of their time, but, you know, long dead and potentially not relevant to modern women. And she said, you know, we can do something together. And my first instinct was, no, that's not for me, because I'm a journalist, I'm a writer, I'm a creative, I'm doing other things. And she said, no, we'll do it together. And, you know, it's not going to take up too much time. Famous last words. And we went from literally the two of us into building what became one of Britain's biggest independent beauty brands before we sold it. And so we did it together. You know, I knew about skin and I was able to communicate and sit on QVC and do all of that because I had all the kind of telly background. And she was amazing with marketing and products and, you know, running the business side. So we did it together. And I often say, if I'm talking to young entrepreneurs now starting brands, you know, it's very hard to do on your own.
Yes.
And make sure that the people you're connected with, your fellow founders, have different skill sets. It's no point in doing the same thing, both being good at design or both being good at tech or whatever. Mm. And Kim and I had very different areas of expertise and knowledge, and we worked incredibly well as a team together. And because we were best friends before we started, we trusted each other implicitly to do the right thing. And it was just a magical bit of alchemy that worked at the time. And this is a time when there were no other little niche brands. I mean, now it's very, very much harder because there's just, you know, almost a new skincare brand being created every day.
Yeah.
Whereas 25 years ago, it was a very different place. So we had a bit of space to do that.
Yeah, you're almost in the golden age of that period.
But it wasn't a lifelong business plan goal of mine. It was something that happened. And I guess that comes back to your original question of being an entrepreneur and taking risks, and when doors open, actually being prepared to walk through them.
Yes.
And say, yeah, okay, I'll try that. I'll go there for a bit and see what happens.
Yeah, it's like you are one of the early iterations of what's called now in the entertainment industry, the multi-hyphenate.
You know, a multi-hyphenate? I've never been called a multi-hyphenate in my entire life. What does that mean?
The multi-hyphenate is like, so I've said this story before, so sorry to bore the listeners, but I was at a film festival a few years ago, Palm Springs Film Festival, and there was an industry talk and had one of the US agents. And they're talking about what they're looking for in terms of talent. We're kind of looking for the next Phoebe Waller-Bridge, you know, someone that can act, someone that can write, you know, really multi-hyphenate. So someone that does a few different things, you know, and are equally good at them, able to sort of jump into different areas. And, you know, you've done so many things to launch a jewelry line. I know you've got your own charity. You're just spinning a lot of plates. I know we're running out of time. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions if that's all right. Sure. How have you managed to do this whilst also being a mother of five children?
My children are quite spread out in ages, so they're not all together. You know, if I'd had five kids, you know, all under the age of 10, I think I would have, you know, probably be under some kind of gravestone by now. But they're spread out. You know, they range in age from 30 down to 11.
Yeah.
And by the time the younger ones came along, the big ones were really great for helping out and lending a hand. So I guess I never really thought about, you know, doing lots of things. I've just always been very organized. I guess been quite driven. I'm a compulsive list maker.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I run things. And yeah, it's there is no real secret other, I guess, than being totally passionate about what you do.
Okay.
Because there's no point in thinking I quite like to do this, because that's just not going to work. You know, you have to be in an area where you cannot not do it. Mm. You cannot not talk about this stuff because it's so important. And I think now for me, working in the world of well-being, working with things that do literally change lives, you know, working with menopausal women, for example, getting hormone help, working with children who do have spectrum disorders and realizing there are nutritional tricks that can help them. When you have that information and that knowledge, you know, I just kind of feel duty bound, come what may, to share it and impart it. And that leads you on to finding out more stuff that you've then got to share and do more. So it just sort of grows. And I just feel very fortunate that I've been able to do it. And as my children have grown and perhaps needed me a little bit less, I've been able to put more time back into work.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very well phrased answer and makes complete sense. What do you do outside when you're not working, which I'm sure is very rarely? What do you do to relax and unwind, Liz?
That is a challenge, actually. I think I wish I had perhaps a little bit more time for that. I've discovered, you know, box sets, like all of us. Yeah. I love watching things that make me laugh. I discovered recently Grace and Frankie. Okay. Been working my way through that. I love that show. And just prioritizing my friends. You know, we are social beings. And I think we all learned during lockdown the importance of face-to-face, real-life connectivity, being able to hug someone, being able to look somebody directly in the eye and not through a screen,
yep.
being able to share a meal or have a cup of tea with somebody. So I really prioritize that. That is kind of my downtime. Who am I going to see? Who do I want to hang out with? Who do I want to share some laughs with? And I wish I had more time for things like reading. My reading is very factual. I read academic journals and I don't have time for fiction and things like that, which is a shame. I'd like to, you know, perhaps one day I'll get through the pile of books that are ever increasing on my bedside table and actually have time to read them. But I think trying to lighten up, that's kind of my hobby, if you like. And I love walking. I live in the countryside mostly, and I do try and get out in the fresh air and walk and appreciate the day, switch off a bit. I enjoy my gym. I have some weights at home that I lift, and I find that really therapeutic. And it's, you know, it's good physically, it's good mentally, it's just good for everything.
Yeah, get that endorphin release, much needed. So you talked about reading. Are there any books that stand out or jump out to you as having had a major impact on you or inspired you in some shape or form?
Not hugely, if I'm really honest. I remember years and years ago reading The Road Less Traveled, and that was kind of one of the first psychology books, if you like, that I dipped into. And I read quite a lot for work now, so I do read a lot about mental health. And I was reading a book by Julia Samuels recently about grief, which is really interesting. And she works a lot with bereaved people, but also you can experience grief in all forms. You can grieve for lost opportunity or lost health, lost relationships, you know, through divorce or whatever. So, you know, that was really quite interesting to acknowledge that kind of thing.
Yeah, fascinating. Final question I'm going to ask you, Liz, is what does the idea of balance mean to you or not?
Oh, I love that. You know, that is one of my expressions, live life in balance. And it is just about that. It's not being too fixated on any one thing. You know, I will say, you know, yeah, don't eat sugar. But hey, you know, if you really want that jam donut, go for it. You know, it's just not a daily thing. It's balanced. And yeah, go to the gym. That's fantastic. But you don't have to do an hour every day. And eat well, eat sensibly, drink in moderation, you know, just be balanced in all things, and try and be balanced in your opinions as well. You know, try and not get too fixated and be slightly open-minded, be prepared to accept another point of view, be prepared to be corrected. You know, I'm always prepared to listen if somebody says, actually, Liz, you're wrong, and this is why. I think we need to have that balance as a state of mind as well as in physically how we live.
I couldn't agree with you more. Liz, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. It's been very eye-opening and interesting and inspiring. Where is best for people to keep up with what you're up to and work-wise?
I'm a compulsive Instagrammer. Okay. That is my chosen chalice, if you like. So I'm Liz L. Mee on Instagram, which is my personal one, which is where I put a lot of stuff. Okay. And then Liz L. Wellbeing is the Instagram for my magazine. And we're on all the usual suspects, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all of that.
Yeah.
And YouTube, recently started YouTubing, which is fun. And then Liz L. Wellbeing is my mothership. That's my website. And there's loads of free downloads, done loads of stuff on gut health and mental health and all sorts of, you know, if you want to know about glutathione, for example, you know, you can head right over there.
Great. Well, I know how I'm spending the rest of my evening. Liz, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, Steve. It's been a real pleasure.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh.
Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.